And a good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. You can take the podcast with you 24/7 on demand by searching for the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. We've got a pretty big update this morning in the ongoing legal battle that has really gripped a good portion of southeastern North Carolina now for nearly a decade, and it surrounds Chemours, the DuPont subsidiary, the DuPont company, with their Fayetteville work site over in Bladen County that has been responsible and was responsible for the polluting of the Cape Fear River with PFAS, right? Forever chemicals. There's been a lot of discussion about that over the last decade here in southeastern North Carolina. And the news that we're tracking this morning is that Chemours is attempting to block internal documents in lawsuits with local utilities, right? So you've got this company, major chemical provider, Chemours, now a spinoff of DuPont. They divested themselves because, of course, all of the legal issues and challenges. They spun off. You've got local water utilities that have had to spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars investing in new infrastructure to deal with polluted water, thanks to our good neighbors, right? That was always my favorite. Your good neighbors, Chemours. You remember those commercials? I'll see if I can pull one of those up real quick. I got a little off the cuff here, but they were running for a period of time. Chemours was running these commercials on television and social media here around the region. And it was just such a slap in the face. Yeah, here it is. Here's the Chemours. This is 3 years ago. This is the Chemours Good Neighbor ad. This is an ad that they spent God knows how much money to produce and put together for them to talk about how they're good neighbors, right? Your next door neighbor, your good neighbor, right? The people that, you know, just dump a bunch of garbage and trash in your lawn every night. That's something that a good neighbor would do. The guy that just disposes of toxic waste in and around your property. It's something a good neighbor does. Let's just remind ourselves how good of a neighbor ye old Chemours company is. Let's take a look here.
Good neighbors care. At Chemours, we care. North Carolina is our home. Our quality of life and environment must be protected. That's why we invested in new technologies that reduce pollutants by over 95%. Our goal? A 99% reduction by 2030. Our investments are leading the way forward with the highest standard for essential manufacturing in North Carolina. Our quality of life begins with a quality environment. That's our Chemours commitment.
Oh, thank God. Okay, so that's your good neighbor Chemours. Now, all of the things that they claim that they did, right? We reduced pollutants by 95% here. We invested $100 million. Well, they were court mandated to do most of that stuff. All right, so this idea that it's now a PR win for them is absurd. I found this commercial to be highly offensive when we saw it roll out. I remember talking about it at the time on the radio when it came out, because it was just so tone deaf. I mean, here's the reality of the whole Chemours situation. We'll get into the story here in a second. I mean, here's the reality of the whole situation. At the time, back in the late 1970s or early 1980s, whenever this started, it's been 40 years at this point, when they were dumping their offshoot water into the Cape Fear River, did they know what was in that water? At the time, probably not. Maybe they did, but probably not. But as science advanced, as we learned more and more about chemicals and chemical compounds and chemical makeups, as we went through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and more tests were available, we were able to really get much more precise measurements. Chemours knew what was going on, but they didn't care to stop it. And so then they run this ad that they're such a good neighbor. Meanwhile, your utility rate for your water and sewer service have freaking skyrocketed because local utilities like CFPUA have had to invest $50 million into granulated active carbon filtration systems. What the hell you mean you're a good neighbor? I understand from a major corporate PR standpoint, this is the kind of crap that comes out. I just can't imagine nobody within even lower level management within Chemours looked at this and said, man, you think people are going to be really pissed when they turn on their television and see that we're buying advertising talking about how good of a neighbor we are? Right? We haven't given the ratepayers a penny. a dime. We've given them nothing. We haven't given the utility companies a freaking cent. But we're going to spend tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars on a digital and terrestrial media campaign to talk about how good of a neighbor we are. To me, just a very stupid attempt by them. I remember them getting hammered in local media at the time for these ads because it just proved how tone deaf that they really were. It just proved how unserious they were about the whole situation. So with that aside, let's get into the details this morning. Chemours and DuPont are once again seeking to block public access to internal documents to be used in a lawsuit against them. This comes more than a decade after court documents revealed DuPont's corporate strategy was to limit and control information related to environmental contamination. And that's really the issue. They knew this was going on internally, but they attempted to keep this very hush-hush. Keep this closed behind closed doors. Keep this on very, very high levels of conversation so the information didn't get out there. And so, of course, they wouldn't have to stop doing it because it would have costed them hundreds of millions of dollars, or because this is what they've invested since, hundreds of millions of dollars to clean it up. So as long as nobody knows about it, then I guess we don't have to worry about it. The suit includes Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. That's what provides many water and sewer services for folks here in New Hanover County, as well as the Lower Cape Fear Water and Sewer Authority. That's a regional group. Brunswick County and Wrightsville Beach in ongoing charges to recoup PFAS cost and damage in the Cape Fear region. The plaintiffs seek to recover CFPUA's $43 million investment in the Sweeney Water Treatment Plant's granular activated carbon filtration system and Brunswick County's H2GO $167.3 million Northwest Water Treatment Plant. This was a large amount of money, of course, that had to be invested. I mean, between just these two utility systems. And by the way, for CFPUA, it's the $43 million is just in Sweeney, right? For everybody else, there's like half a dozen other stations. Those all have low-pressure reverse osmosis systems. So the GAC system was over $43 million and I think has a $3 million a year annual operating cost associated with it. I mean, so you're talking about $200-plus million worth of monies that has had to be invested in just two counties alone. It doesn't even include Pender. That's a mess up there right now. They still don't even, I don't think I have the land even picked out for their water filtration and treatment plant up there. They're not even at that point yet. Over $200 million to ratepayer-funded utilities. What does that mean? Well, it means that these companies don't have any other way of generating revenue, generating money outside of rates. Now, yes, they can go and get grants and things of that nature, but they are a ratepayer-funded utility. It's right in the name, Cape Fear Public Utility Authority. So you and I have burdened the cost of this $43-plus million of investment in New Hanover County, $167 million over in Brunswick. Major amounts of money that ratepayers have had to dole out for each and every month when they get their water and sewer bill. Right now, we get it monthly. CFPUA used to be, what, every 3 months? Now it's once a month. As reported by Coastal Review, Chemours and DuPont filed a February the 28th motion to seal thousands of internal communications used by attorneys representing local governments and utilities in the suit. The chemical manufacturers maintain that the documents contain competitively sensitive information related to the firm's operation. CFPUA plans to file a motion opposing the efforts to seal the information by the April 14th response deadline. CFPUA spokesperson Vaughn Haggerty wrote in a statement to Port City Daily, who's got the story this morning, quote, CFPUA's legal team does not believe a good basis exists to seal most, if not all, of these documents, many of which are already publicly available elsewhere. The documents that Chemours and DuPont want to keep hidden comprise a comprehensive record of the company's decades of PFAS contamination of the Cape Fear River and the region. It's a record our customers and community deserve to see. Now, let me state by saying this. I understand the idea that you've got potentially some sort of competitive secrets, some sort of competitive documents, things of that nature that you don't want released to the public. I think that's totally reasonable. Completely reasonable. This Chemours, DuPont, whatever you think about them, they're a private entity. They have trade secrets. They have things that they do proprietary inside of their Fayetteville work site and other plants that you would not want out there for competitors to have. I completely understand that. But for them to use that as this catch-all for these documents, for them to use this as essentially a stone wall to say, well, you get nothing. You get to see nothing about the contamination that we damn well sure knew about while we polluted the Cape Fear River for 40-plus years. That's absurd. But, you know, they claim to be a good neighbor, right? They've invested $100-plus million, even though it was court-mandated, in new filtration systems. Right? They've got that underground barrier wall that's in place now. By the way, behind schedule and does not necessarily meet the regulations put in place by the state, but we'll step aside on that for a second. This is your good neighbor. This is Chemours. This is DuPont. According to the Chemours motion, the documents it seeks to seal primarily consist of employees' internal communication. Subjects of discussion include toxicity data, big stuff there, exposure assessments, medical monitoring programs, crisis management communications, and options for asserting and addressing environmental impacts of its operation. So why is Chemours doing this? Well, because there's some very damning information within these emails. Can you imagine what the internal crisis management communication looks like in and around the time that Star News ran the story, the front page, late breaking story on the contamination in the Cape Fear River? It had to have been an absolute freaking nightmare in terms of internal crisis management. Can you imagine what those emails look like? And going back further, toxicity data, exposure assessments. This stuff has been conducted by Chemours. It's been required to for decades. So I would love to see what some of that data looks like. Now, unfortunately, as you go back to the 80s and the 90s, the measurements and the data is probably not going to be anywhere near as accurate and concise as we have right now, where we can measure parts per trillion with a very, very high accuracy due to the fact that science has advanced. But I think this is all relevant information. It's something that, you know, I would hope a good neighbor would be willing to provide. By the way, you can get your comments in on the show this morning, live on Rumble, YouTube, and X. You can comment there, or you can text in this morning as well at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. Just include your name and where you're texting from. We'll get your comments on the show this morning. Other examples include DuPont and Chemours' email exchanges about the presence of PFAS in the Cape Fear River, a Chemours employee correspondence regarding toxicology studies on PFOAs and Gen X, including Chemours' investigation of emissions control and environmental impact out of its Fayetteville Works facility, which is in Bladen County, as well as the current state of the plant's wastewater discharges. Now, it's important to note, and it's pointed out in the article over at Port City Daily, that this isn't the first time that DuPont and Chemours have tried to block these internal documents. These companies took similar actions in another lawsuit that was filed by a group of Fayetteville residents in 2018. More than 2,500 plaintiffs joined the case in Fayetteville since. On Monday, March the 31st, U.S. District Judge for the Eastern District of North Carolina, James Dever III, ruled that DuPont and Chemours will need to face trespassing claims for PFAS pollution with damages determined at trial in that other case. the class action plaintiffs obtained and cited a broad range of internal documents in their legal briefs. DuPont and Chemours claim many of the documents contain sensitive business information and filed a motion to prevent public access. However, the court determined unsealed documents to be in the public interest of the case. That was in November of last year. DuPont's Fayetteville work facility discharged PFOAs in the Cape Fear River for nearly 40 years before replacing it with Gen X, which the EPA now believes is potentially even more toxic than its predecessor. Before its spinoff, Chemours took over the Fayetteville work facility in 2015. Now, the timing of that is very interesting, isn't it? As soon as this information started seeping out into the public, as soon as there was a higher level of scrutiny on what was going on, all of a sudden this new entity, Chemours, spun up. Why was that the case? Well, it seems obvious. I'm not an attorney and I don't have any sort of inside information, but it would seem obvious it was done to protect the parent company in DuPont. You spin up this entity, Chemours, you just give them the Fayetteville work site, your damages should be relatively limited. That, it seems to me, was the attempt by DuPont to try and offload this to some other entity. Still essentially owned and operated by DuPont, but a subsidiary of DuPont. The Department of Environmental Quality and CFPUA received an EPA and NC State University research report about Gen X contamination in the lower Cape Fear River back in 2016. Former DEQ secretary at the time did not appear to include in the report the transition documents to his successor. Former DEQ air quality inspector Tom McKinley alleges that the agency was aware of the Fayetteville worksite plant's PFAS contaminations as early as 2004. That's pretty damning. And this is another example of state government failing to do what it needs to do. There is plenty of evidence that the state DEQ, DAQ, whatever state agency it was at the time, the name has changed since 2004, they knew about PFAS contamination. They knew that Chemours was dumping water into the Cape Fear River that had high levels of these forever chemicals, and they just didn't care. Their permits were never revoked. Nobody ever blew the whistle on it. It literally wasn't until a Star News piece back, you know, about a decade ago at this point. The public did not become aware of high PFAS concentrations in the Cape Fear River until Vaughn Haggerty, a former Star News reporter who then became the CFPUA Director of Communications, broke the story in 2017. Wilmington-based nonprofit Cape Fear River Watch sued Chemours, culminating in a 2019 consent order putting a number of PFAS reduction requirements on the corporation. Which goes back to the ad that I was talking about. When they, you know, claim, looking at the ad here, that they, you know, reduced pollutants by 95%, that was because they were mandated by a court order to do so. When they claim that their goal of reducing 99% by whatever time period, it's because they are required by law to do so. They want you to believe that they're doing it out of the good nature of their heart. And they want you to believe that, well, after all, they're a good neighbor, right? That's what we've been talking about. So they're just doing it out of the kindness of their own heart. No, no, quite the contrary. There's a consent order that's been in place now for almost six years, and they are legally obligated and required to follow that consent order. At least they're supposed to be. They continue to blow past deadlines on that, and nobody wants to hold them accountable. Cape Fear River Watch Executive Director Donna Sargent said, quote, "The fact that Chemours and DuPont are trying to hide from the public eye 20,000 pages of documents about their company's facility and its pollution is almost comically transparent, if it weren't so dangerous and sinister. This attempt, and in and of itself, should be considered profound proof that this information needs to see the light of day, especially considering Chemours is actively seeking to expand PFAS production at the site." Former West Virginia Supreme Court of Appeals Judge Alan Motes found DuPont engaged in a broader strategy of limiting and controlling information to avoid liability, maximize profit, and sidestep cleanup efforts in a 2010 opinion for a class action lawsuit that took place in the state of West Virginia, where DuPont was sued for health impacts from toxic pollution originating from a West Virginia zinc smelting plant operated by DuPont. Motes wrote in the 2010 opinion, quote, DuPont constructed a team whose primary objective was to, quote, minimize the potential for issues and dots to be connected, meaning to minimize the dissemination of information and ultimately thwart toxic tort claims. DuPont's strategy of connecting the dots was explained in a PowerPoint slideshow during a company meeting focused on a management of its various hazardous sites. A West Virginia circuit court found DuPont sought to limit public interest by manipulating and controlling regulatory agencies and omitting of vital information to mislead plaintiffs, environmental groups, media, and government officials. Well, unfortunately, money talks. And when you have a company the size of DuPont, which is a major, major American company, DuPont, I'm not exactly sure what their current net worth is or how big of a company they are as it stands right now. I mean, they've got 24,000 employees. They're a multi-billion dollar business. They're a major company. I mean, in revenues in 2024, they had $12.5 billion in revenue. Their operating income in 2024 was $1.57 billion. Billion with a B. And so the idea that they can essentially pay off or find ways to, you know, they claims here in this West Virginia thing, focus of its management in when it talked about controlling regulatory agencies, that's pretty easy to do when you're a multi-billion dollar company, unfortunately. National Resource Defense Council Senior Strategic Director of Health Eric Olson told the Port City Daily, quote, there are multiple tactics that the chemical industry has learned from the tobacco industry, including trying to keep all of the documents that have been discovered in tort litigation under seal and creating fake institutions that are supposedly doing scientific studies but are actually under control of those companies. Wilmington-based Clean Cape Fear similarly seeks public access to the documents. The group does have an online petition. However, it's obvious a petition is not going to force Chemours to release or do anything. It's obviously going to have to come from some sort of a court-mandated order. That petition has 1,200 signatures as it stands this morning. The petition notes, quote, Chemours has a chronic problem of withholding information. In the nearly 8 years since we learned about our PFAS tap water contamination crisis, Chemours has only held one public meeting in our area. We believe at every turn the defendants make it nearly impossible that the harmed and faultless community seek basic forms of justice, remedies, and access to information. The grassroots group stated communities have been forced to rely on limited PFAS information provided from court filings, including documents cited in investigative journalist Sharon Lear's series on DuPont and 3M's concealed internal studies finding severe PFAS health hazards decades ago. That's exactly what I was talking about right there. Clean Cape Fear noted that United Nations experts criticized the Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Quality last year for failing to provide information and remedies regarding DuPont and Chemours contamination. Those officials wrote, quote, health and environmental regulators in the United States have fallen short in their duty to protect against business-related human rights abuses, including providing the public, particularly affected communities in North Carolina, with the type and amount of information necessary to prevent harm and seek damages, where legal action has been taken against two companies, enforcement and remediation measures have been inadequate. So there's a lot in this story here. It's kind of a to the credit of Port City Daily. Peter Castellano has got the story this morning. It's a pretty good summary of what's going on right now. And there's a lot of various moving pieces here. You know, the biggest for the vast majority of people listening this morning, it's the fact that this company has refused to pay the price for what they've done. Now, I understand that the slow wheels of justice, the slow cog of justice, takes time. And unfortunately, it takes a lot of time. It's something that does not happen overnight. It's something that does not happen even within just a couple of years. That's the unfortunate reality of very complex legal challenges, the like of which this is. Right, you've got a major multi-billion dollar entity that is fighting a serious legal challenge over a potential contamination issue where the science is, there are questions about the science in all of it. And it creates major confusion. It creates very lengthy legal battles that unfortunately take a lot of time to deal with. So in the meantime, this is really where I find things to be incredibly frustrating. So while court takes forever to operate, you and I have had to pay the price. You and I have to deal with the ramifications of this, right? Because CFPUA, they don't have the opportunity to deal with this in a 4, 5, 6, 10 year time frame. As a public utility, once this information came to light, they have a moral obligation and an obligation of their ratepayers to provide them with clean drinking water. Right, when you turn on your tap, you expect that you're going to be getting clean and safe drinking water from CFPUA or from H2GO, the Brunswick Water Utility Service, wherever it might be. So while Chemours has been able to drag this process out in court, CFPUA and others have had to invest massive amounts of money. And the technology, I mean, it's truly amazing. The granular activated carbon filtration system that exists over at CFPUA is remarkably cool. And it does a very effective job at getting those chemicals out of the water. It does a very good job at filtering out those chemicals. It does cost a lot to operate, millions of dollars a year, but it works. And as I mentioned earlier, the biggest frustration with all of this is that while CFPUA and others have had to invest tens of millions of dollars into these filtration systems, you and I have been burdened with the bill. You and I are the ones that have had to pay for these filtration systems. Not Chemours, not DuPont, not the company responsible, but you and I, through massive increase in rates in the water and sewer services that we get from these companies. That, to me, is the most asinine part out of all of it. And there's really nothing you can do about it. It's essentially a sit-and-wait game. Because this will eventually be dealt with. Eventually, Chemours will be, if I had to guess, I'd say eventually Chemours will be required to pay back some of this money, if not all of it. But then what? I mean, is CFPUA going to start cutting a check to individuals for the increased in water rates that they've paid over the last couple of years? Is the same thing going to happen in Brunswick County? I don't know. Right? They'll eventually get the money, but that doesn't mean that the damage hasn't already happened. And this kind of works out well with a piece of legislation that were a couple pieces of legislation that were filed in the General Assembly last week. One filed in the House, one in the Senate. Both bills target polluters that dump a class of forever chemical known as PFAS into waterways. In the Senate, it was Majority Leader State Senator Michael Lee who introduced Senate Bill 666. That's titled the 2025 Water Safety Act. The bill directs the Department of Environmental Quality to establish limits on PFAS emissions by October. The bill would also establish a $56 million fund to reimburse public utilities that pay to filter out the compounds themselves. Meanwhile, in the House, Representative Ted Davis, also a Republican, filed House Bill 569, titled the PFAS Pollution and Polluter Liability Act. The bill would hold polluters that make PFAS from scratch liable for violating limits established by the EPA if contamination reaches waterways that are used by public utilities. Representative Davis said that the money charged to polluters would be used to pay for water treatment. He said that it's not fair that utility authorities and in turn ratepayers have to pay millions to filter PFAS compounds out of public drinking water. With Representative Davis saying, quote, "It's not the ratepayers that should be responsible for the cost of making the drinking water clean. It should be the polluters, which are the ones that put the stuff in the water that went into the utility authority that resulted in them having to incur all of these expenses to treat water. I take providing clean drinking water very seriously, and I'm going to do everything that I can to protect the people that I represent." Some pretty strong comments there from Representative Ted Davis, State Senator Michael Lee filing similar legislation as well, because this is one essentially ground zero for many of these conversations. This has been a big issue, and one of the largest parts of all of it is that there's not been an enforcement mechanism. These companies have been allowed to operate in the manner in which they are not following the 2019 consent order. They blow past the pollution timelines. They blow past the rates in which they are allowed to release, and nobody can do anything about it. There's nothing, literally nothing, that can be done. Now, the General Assembly could do something. I've argued for years that I think the Attorney General has the authority to go down there and put a padlock on the front of CFPUA's building and say, yeah, you're no longer allowed to operate. But to this point, that hasn't happened. It's been continued slaps on the wrist from so-called environmental agencies in North Carolina. DEQ hasn't done jack shit about this. They continue to allow this entity to operate in a manner that does not follow a court-mandated consent order, and they do nothing. I mean, that's been the biggest frustration, one of the biggest frustrations out of all of this. Nothing is ever done. These companies are allowed to act and operate this way year after year with no semblance of accountability. Now, they'll get the accountability eventually. In what, 5, 10 more years as the court battle takes place? Meanwhile, I have paid and you have paid hundreds of extra dollars a year for water and sewer services. What's my recourse? What's my remediation? Am I going to get a chunk of the $43 million back that CFPUA had to invest? It's a ratepayer-funded utility, after all. The whole situation is a mess. Chemours knew about this for decades. They didn't care that they were polluting the Cape Fear River. They were finally called on it. The public first got wind of it back in 2017. And now, all these years later, they're saying, we don't want to release these documents. It's got sensitive information. But after all, they're a good neighbor, right? We've been told in countless television ads and social media ads that Chemours is just a good neighbor, looking out for you and looking out for me. Nothing screams good neighbor like polluting your waterways for 40-plus years and trying to skirt away liability. Sounds like a great neighbor to me. It's somebody I definitely want to live right next door to. So I'm not sure exactly when we'll get new details on this story. It's one of these things where you kind of get a dump of information every couple of months, maybe a couple times a year. You get some new information out of it. As soon as we get some more of that, we'll bring you the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. I want to remind you that if you are interested in getting daily show notes, I'll have a lot in there today about Chemours and this ongoing legal battle that takes place. I encourage you to head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you can get those daily show notes, access to those as well as our monthly Zoom chat, which takes place at the end of each and every month. That is all available over there. Again, patreon.com/Nick Craig. We'll grab a quick break on the other side. We've got some new tariff news to get into this morning, plus a very interesting exchange in the United States Senate from Senator Tom Tillis. Those details coming up after this as the Nick Craig Show rolls on this Wednesday morning, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on a Wednesday morning, YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. We do have some breaking news as it relates to tariffs coming in this morning. China has just announced that they are slapping retaliatory tariffs of 84% on all U.S. goods in response to the ratcheting up that has taken place over the last couple of days between the administration as they continue to ratchet up pressure on tariffs nationwide to secure what the administration claims is a more fair and just deal for U.S. companies that try and ship and import goods to other countries across the nation. This was yesterday in the White House press briefing room, Caroline Levitt talking with reporters about these tariffs and talking about, the 104% tariffs that are set to go in place for Chinese imports.
About tariffs.
Look, I just spoke to the president about this, and he believes that China wants to make a deal with the United States. He believes China has to make a deal with the United States. It was a mistake for China to retaliate. The president, when America is punched, he punches back harder. That's why there will be 104% tariffs going into effect on China tonight at midnight. But the president believes that Xi and China want to make a deal. They just don't know how to get that started. And the president also wanted me to tell all of you that if China reaches out to make a deal, he'll be incredibly gracious, but he's going to do what's best for the American people.
So China has to call first?
The Chinese want to make a deal. They just don't know how to do it. But the president will be implementing these 104% tariffs on China tonight.
So those took place at midnight this morning. So those are now in effect now with the Trump administration slapping those tariffs, according to the press secretary, as you just heard. Those 104% tariffs are now in place for Chinese imports as of today, officially. With that, China was already expected to see an increase in tariffs under Trump's reciprocal tariff plan, which was rolled out last week, almost 1 week ago. The extra 104 was added because the country's refusal to make a deal. Trump warned with this discussion that took place last week that if individuals are going to try and, or these countries rather, are going to retaliate against the United States, if they are going to not come to the table, they are not going to have good faith negotiations on these tariffs, then, and they retaliate, then he is going to ratchet it up. And that's exactly what you're seeing between now taking place between China and the United States. And so just reading the details, I will admit I haven't read this yet because it's just breaking this morning. It says, quote, China has pushed back once again on U.S. President Donald Trump's tariff policies by hiking its levies on U.S. imports to more than 80%. China's Office of Tariff Commission of State Council said that tariffs on U.S. goods will rise to 84% from where they are currently at 34% starting on April 10th. So that would be midnight tonight here on the East Coast, according to a translation of the statement. This comes after the latest U.S. tariff hike, which bring levies on Chinese goods to more than 104%, took effect this morning. The repeated escalation of tariff threatens to bring trade between two of the world's most important economies to a standstill, according to CNBC. The Trump administration announced a sweeping new tariff policy last week and warned other countries not to retaliate. Some nations, including Japan, have come to the bargaining table. They seem to be willing to negotiate on the tariffs, but China seems to be taking a more hardline stance. After China's initial response to tariffs were announced on April the 2nd, Trump announced an additional 50% hike, putting the total levy for Chinese goods to 104%. So this is a breaking news story this morning. We'll check in with the markets live, who are, as you can imagine, not reacting to this news very well. Dow futures down about 700 points right now. That's 1.8%. S&P futures down about 85 points, 1.7% there. NASDAQ futures down 1.3%, about 235 points there. So markets not reacting well to this continued escalation that's taking place between the United States and, in this case, China, who has decided that they are going to try and retaliate against the United States over these tariff announcements. And, you know, I made the point yesterday, and I'll make it again. While I'm not in favor of a trade war, I don't think overall a trade war is good for the United States. We do have some major inequities that need to be dealt with. And the fact that China is being the fact that China is unwilling to come to the table, the fact that China is unwilling to go through and actually begin this discussion and allow more free trade to exist, well, then this is what's going to happen. I mean, you can like Trump's decision or not like Trump's decision. You can think it's smart. You can think it's really stupid. He's very consistent with this. He has made the point that this is what he is standing on. He has made the point that this is the policy going forward for this administration. And he's not going to back down off of it. The administration is willing to take short-term hardships, short-term pain for what they claim are going to be longer-term good times, longer-term investments for the United States. How will that play out? What exactly will that look like? That remains to be seen. But this is what the administration wants to do. It's not a surprise. It's not a shock. Trump has been talking about tariffs. Trump made the point during the presidential campaign that tariffs were going to be a major part of this administration, a major part of the policies of the Trump 2.0 team. So, I mean, the idea that this was completely unexpected seems to be a little disingenuous to me. And in the meantime, while the administration is moving forward with this, you've got Congress that wants to step in and decide whether they want to move forward with these tariffs. Individuals, including Senator Tom Tillis, want to have a say in this tariff conversation. I've got some audio from yesterday, a Senate committee meeting that took place as trade representatives testified on the Trump tariffs. Senator Tom Tillis leading some of the questioning there. Let's listen to a little bit of this. Tillis makes some good points at some point. Other times, you know, kind of going against the grain and the administration. It's going to be an interesting thing to play out. Here's Tom Tillis yesterday morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ambassador Greer, thank you for being here. Back in the 90s, I was in management consulting, and there was a new platform that came out that promised to transform the business industry, ERP. Some of the early attempts at implementing the system proposed an a la prima approach. Let's do it all at once. Let's change the plumbing out. Let's get it all in, get it done, rip the Band-Aid off. It proved to be hugely unsuccessful. There were a lot of very visible projects, and the industry decided there needed to be a methodical sort of prioritization of what parts of the business needed to perform better sooner, and how do you layer onto that a comprehensive strategy. It looks like we've got a novel approach here in terms of an a la prima approach. I'm not a trade expert, and I'm not going to question it at this point. I do have a question about, at the end of the day, the other thing in management consulting we like to focus on is this concept of one throat to choke. In other words, when you're finally taking a look at a strategy, someone has to own it, and you can't say that it's the president or the vice president. So my first question to you, in this scenario, the decision maker who decided the a la prima approach, who has obviously had to have spent time anticipating what we saw in the markets and some of the pushback, I'm assuming this all got gamed out, because it's a novel approach, it needs to be thought out. Whose throat do I get to choke if this proves to be wrong?
Well, Senator, you can certainly always talk to me, but I.
But are you at the tip of the spear?
Well, I'm at the tip of the spear for certainly.
Did you propose the a la prima approach?
So, first of all, I would push back, Senator, just a little bit on this. We've excluded pharmaceuticals and semiconductors
to take
a different kind
good.
Of approach.
So, let's make it.
And we've excluded
question.
USMCA.
Section 232 and 301. We know particularly Section 232 is still on aluminum. Section 301 is Chinese imports, where there's no other provider. I overheard you say that maybe, or I thought I heard you say in response to another question, that for the near term there won't be any exclusions. Is that true of China, where they have said the U.S. is unilaterally bullying and completely groundless and they're going to fight to the end? Are the 232 and 301 tariffs exclusions on the shelves until we get to a reasonable agreement with China. I'm just trying to answer a question that I have several people in North Carolina asking.
So the president, again, is the final decision maker on all of these things, and he has directed that there not be exclusions or exemptions.
There will not be any exclusions on steel, aluminum, or any products that are only manufactured in China for the foreseeable future until China determines what the end is, because they said they're going to fight to the end. Again, I'm just trying to communicate.
I got to push back on Tillis there for a second. I mean, this idea that China is going to be the one dictating terms on this, I don't think is accurate. I mean, yes, China can say, oh, we're going to fight this till the end. We're going to see this through its through and through. You know, I've made the point, and I think it's a valid one, that I think China's got more to lose than the United States on this. Their entire economy exists based on the fact that they are able to export goods predominantly to the United States. Their entire economy revolves around the fact that they can import cheap goods into the U.S., which is their largest market. There's not enough people elsewhere in the world to buy Chinese goods. There's just not. We are the largest importer of those products. So if China wants to see this to the end, their economy is going to take it on the mouth as well. Or take it on the chin, I should say. It's not like they just get to do this willy-nilly and it has no effect on their economy. There's not going to be anybody to buy this stuff. And that's China's entire economy. Literally, producing these goods. Stealing U.S. intellectual property and importing cheap goods into the U.S. That's what they do. That's their entire economic model. So I don't agree with the assertion there from Senator Tillis that China is going to be the one determining this and playing out this thing solely by themselves. They are going to take, I would argue, maybe even more pain than the United States, especially in the short term. More from Senator Tillis yesterday.
Yes,
questions
that's the president's
that I've asked.
Policy,
so there will
sir.
Be no exclusions. Yes. I won't waste your time asking for them. That's the main reason I wanted to ask the question. So again, I'm just trying to get my head around the logic of an a la prima approach, and I'm waiting to be, I'm waiting to see it be successful. But it just seems like we've decided to begin a trade war on all fronts. And that's okay if the person who thought this through has an answer for why you go after partners that we have a very long storied relationship with. Maybe we give some developing countries a break because we're trying to actually get their economies functioning, make them look to the West versus to Chinese investment. So it just seems like I'm getting my head around the a la prima approach. I'm not condemning it because I'm not a trade expert, but I still at some point, and I understand that you are the trade rep. So if you own this decision, then I'll look to you to figure out if we're going to be successful. If you don't on the decision, I'm just trying to figure out whose throat I get to choke if it's wrong and who I put up on a platform and thank them for the novel approach that was successful if they're right. But here's what I'm really worried. I'm not going to ask any more questions. I'm just going to tell you every time we talk about people having patience. We need to understand that the founding fathers made damn sure that that patience was never more than about 14 months, really. Everything that we need to do to know what the political environment is going to be about next year, it's going to be done by February of next year. So in your mind, do you believe that over the course of the next 14 months, we're going to have a level of certainty and the people in the trailer park that I grew up in who are going to bear the brunt of some of these short-term cost increases, maybe some job displacement for a period of time, how are they going to be feeling Groundhog Day 2027 or 2026? Do we feel like the majority of this will be resolved? And I'll be able to thank whoever thought that the a la prima approach was a good idea, because that's about the timeline we've got to work with.
Well, Senator, these people who voted for the president is the same situation I grew up in. Yeah. You know that.
I agree. But let me just finish here because I don't want to get in the way of my colleagues.
Yes.
I'll be 65 in August. Every day, 11,400 people celebrate their 65th birthday. That's 4 million a year. So they're, let's say from 60 to 65, people looking at their 401k statements. They did vote for President Trump. They voted for me. I hope that they will again in both cases. Well, maybe not the president, but I intend to run for re-election. I'm just trying to figure out if they're going to feel good about this, because a long-term play in American politics and a long-term play in American policy, public policy formation, is about 12 months from the beginning of an administration. I wish you well, but I am skeptical. Thank you.
You know, and the point that Tillis made there, I think, is an accurate one. When he talks about people's patience, when he talks about how long individuals are willing to deal with a situation. Now, obviously, it's obvious from his statements that he is trying to look at what his potential reelection is going to look like in 2026, right? He's got a vested interest in not having an economy that is struggling severely due to tariffs. He's very much got a vested interest in that. That would be very damaging for him as a Republican on the top of the ticket in a state that is incredibly and increasingly more competitive than it is each and every year. So he's got a vested interest. But I think his point is well taken. Long-term plays in American politics typically don't work. They don't. And it's because American people are living in the here and now, and rightfully so. Right? We've got bills that are due this month. We've got bills that are due this week. We don't have the luxury or the flexibility to say, oh yeah, we can take it on the chin for 6 or 8 months because this will make trade policy better. That's a very real thing for a lot of people, whether you agree with it or not. I mean, you look at the rising amount of debt that takes place in America. When you look at how many Americans live paycheck to paycheck, it's an astonishingly high number. Right, around 65% living paycheck to paycheck. 65%. They don't have 6, 8, 12, 15 months to watch this stuff play out. I mean, you've got a very high number of people that do not have the economic flexibility to do that. And I think that's a real concern, and it's not too far off from the concerns that I brought up, and you've heard from many other people as well. Does the American population, does the American consumer have the financial ability to hold out for some of these short-term hardships, some of this short-term pain that undoubtedly will take place due to these decisions? Now, I don't agree with Tillis's whole statement there. I think the idea that China gets to lay out the argument, China's the one that gets to determine how things work, I don't agree with that at all. I cannot subscribe to that idea from Senator Tillis. Now, we are getting some additional comments in this morning. Scott Bassinet is the U.S. Treasury Secretary. He was on with Maria Bartiromo over at Fox Business just a couple of minutes ago. I have not had a chance to watch this yet, but this is in relation to the 84% tariffs that are set to go in place tomorrow coming out of China on U.S. goods. Let's listen to this for the first time together.
Maria, I think it's unfortunate that the Chinese actually don't want to come and negotiate because they are the worst offenders in the international trading system. They have the most imbalanced economy in the history of the modern world. And you know, I can tell you that this escalation is a loser for them, that they have some very smart, the economists, the academicians, technocrats within their bureaucracy, and they would be telling the leadership that we do not have the edge here. They are the surplus country, that their exports to the U.S. are 5 times our exports to China. So, you know, they can raise their tariffs, but so what?
So what? I mean, that's kind of the point there, is that the Chinese economy is so propped up on exporting to the United States, or importing into the United States, or exporting from China, importing into the United States, that many argue, and it appears the case for the Treasury Secretary, that they don't have the cards. Right? They are going to take it the brunt of this potentially a lot worse than the United States. President Donald Trump putting out a statement on Truth Social just minutes ago saying, quote, "This is a great time to move your company into the United States of America, like Apple and so many others in record numbers are doing. zero tariffs and almost immediate electrical slash energy hookups and approvals. No environmental delays. Don't wait. Do it now. A little bit of a Billy Mays here. Don't wait. Call now. Move your company to the United States. I get where the president's at. I get where people like Peter Navarro are at. I really thought his comments yesterday were incredibly insightful. Again, whether you agree with them or not, to understand the working of what's going on, to understand who the major power players are in the room and how they're making that discussion or how they're making their decisions is a very important thing to know. And so if you missed yesterday's show, I would encourage you to go check it out on the Tuesday edition. The comments from Peter Navarro on CNBC earlier in the week shined a very strong light into what this administration's policy is. It's going to be a continue to wait and see game. Again, the breaking news this morning, if you're just joining us live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, China is set to slap retaliatory tariffs of 84% on U.S. goods. This is in response to the 104% tariffs that went into effect midnight this morning on the East Coast against those Chinese goods. The escalation continues. The trade war seems to be continuing, and that is having a major impact on markets this morning as well. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures all in the red, fluctuating back and forth from a couple hundred points down. So we'll see that throughout the day, and I'm sure we'll get some reaction from the White House and those officials today, and we'll give you those details as we get them right here on the Nick Craig Show. Want to remind you, you can keep up to date with breaking news outside of our live show on the weekday mornings. If you're a user on X, formerly Twitter, head on over to x.com/Nicholas M. Craig. Give me a follow over there, and I keep up to date with some national news, but mostly state and local politics, x.com/Nick Craig. Well, that's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for joining us live at 7 a.m. on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and of course, 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.